to John chapter 4. John chapter 4 is one of those very interesting stories that we get, and we only find it in the book of John. It's not recorded in the others. And yet it's one of those passages that is very telling about Jesus and about how he dealt with the people around him. John chapter 4 begins, "When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee. And he must needs go through Samaria." I want to stop right there for just a second. That little phrase, "he must needs go through Samaria," here's the bottom line. He didn't. The bottom line was, when people went from Jerusalem up north, they usually did not go through Samaria. In fact, they avoided it completely. They would rather walk extra miles, cross the river, go up on the east side, come back across the river, rather than walking through Samaria. And yet it says right here that Jesus said, "I have to go through Samaria." Now that tells us something about Jesus, and I wanted to begin to get us thinking, what if, so that we can pattern our lives after him and our actions after him. And I want you to write this down. You have the notes there with a few little blanks, if you would take the time. It said, "What if we made it a priority to look for those who were different than we are?" What if we made it a priority to look for those that are different than we are? Made it a priority. Now, Jesus told his disciples, "Listen, I need to go through Samaria." Now, from what I know about the disciples, I can almost assure you there were a few people who did not like that idea. I can assure you that there were people among them that are going, "Why are we doing this? No one else does it this way. We always went the other way. Why are we going this way? Why does Jesus want us to be around all of those Samaritans?" And yet Jesus said, "We need to go here." He made it a priority, and he made sure that they knew that it was a priority to go and be among people that were different than they were. A few years ago, I traveled. God has allowed me. I always thought I would go to the mission field in a specific country, but the Lord allowed me to come to Miami instead. And that's kind of like the capital city of all Latin America. So I just kind of live in the capital. And so I get invited to all of these places, and I found it very interesting. Everywhere I went, they would say this. And this phrase said, "You know, we have an immigration problem here." And I would be in Mexico, and I'm going, "Really?" And I would be in Spain, and they say, "We have an immigration problem here." And I'm going, "Really?" Said, "Yeah, we don't know what to do with all these people from other countries that are coming here. How do you do it in Miami?" And then I would go to Chile, and they'd say, "We have an immigration problem." And Argentina says, "We have an immigration problem." You hear that enough times, you start paying attention to what's going on. And I remember hearing someone speak one day, and it just opened my eyes and my mind to a whole new thing. Listen to this. The worldwide migration phenomenon is one of the most exciting ways that God is working in our world today. 17% of the world population, 17% of the world is not in its country of origin today. Think about that. More people have been displaced in the last 2 years than at any other point in history. What is happening? What is going on? I was reading a rather large book, and it's kind of like a college textbook for the first half, and then the second half gets interesting. But the first part, you know, it's talking about diaspora missiology. What is God doing spreading people out around the world? And it's an amazing thing because the U.S. ranks as the number one immigrant receiving country in our world, drawing more than 20% of all the immigrants internationally. Now you're going, well, that's the problem. Whoa, hold on. Before you get excited about talking problem, do you want to be in on what God is doing? Because I guarantee you, 17% of the world does not move without God having something to do with it. In fact, as we talked to our missionaries in Greece, they have had far more people saved in the last few years with the immigrants coming through their country than they ever did with just the Greeks there. And it's amazing that in Spain, when I visit there, they tell me the churches are filling up in Spain, but not with Spaniards, but with people from other countries. And then when they go somewhere else over there, they're going and finding the Lord somewhere. It seems like when we move, we kind of are a little more open. All of our underpinnings culturally and family and all those ties that keep us from maybe coming to the Lord, when we move, everything gets shaken and we're a little more open. And so Jesus took his disciples and he said, I have to go through Samaria. What if we made it a priority? Right here in Plantation, in Sunrise, in Davie, and all. What if we made it a priority not just to run into them, but to actually look for people that were different than we are? Continues on, then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near of the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there, therefore Jesus, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. Then cometh the woman of Samaria to draw water, and Jesus saith unto her, give me a drink, for his disciples were gone away into a city to buy meat. Would you stop there just a second? What if we began the conversations and the relationships with people that were different? What if we, as followers of Jesus, followed the example that Jesus set and we said the first word? About 3 years ago now, we had a gentleman preaching. His name is George Husni, and he works with Muslims around the world, written many books. And he was in our church, and he asked this question. He said, how many of you here work around or know or live around Muslim people? 95 of our people raised their hand. Now, I have a question for you. How many of you here work around, know, live around Muslims, and you know they're one? Would you raise your hand? Okay, how many of you, when you see a Muslim, you don't know what to do? You're just not sure what to do. You look at them, you see them, they may be dressed different, they may look different. You all kind of news stories start flashing through your brain, and you don't know what to do. And here's what he said, let me help you. When you see one, put out your hand and say, hello. And he had us all practice. Say, hello. Can we all do this? Hello. And the whole church goes, hello. And we're going, we're feeling real stupid right now. I know. It seems so simple. And yet it seems to take so much just to say, hello. Jesus reached out to a Samaritan. Number two, a Samaritan woman. We're crossing two boundaries here. He crossed two major cultural boundaries and just said, could I have a glass of water? Could you give me a drink? Just very, very simple. Let me tell you, the first gesture is usually the most difficult. But if this is our country, if this is where we're in, that means we are host to the people that are here. And as the host to the people God has brought, it is up to us to extend ourselves and make the first effort in welcoming them. Now, I'm just looking around the crowd, and may I say, I am glad there is diversity. I look around, I get scared when I go to churches and they're all white. No offense, but it's really scary. It's like, do they not have sun in this part of the state? What's going on here? But I'll just be honest with you. It just means that, hey, we're trying to reflect what's around us. And that is great. That's the way it should be. That's how heaven's going to be. And it's going to be so great. And now as we look around us, for those who have come and have adapted, and you are, this is now where you are, you know how difficult that is. Last Sunday, I met after the first service with a couple of young men. They're from Colombia, and their English is not real good yet. They're working at it, but it's still struggling. And one was going to start coming to my house. I'm the senior pastor, but I'm in charge of the middle schoolers. You say, why? Because they're a whole lot more fun than you adults. I mean, let's just be honest. A lot less drama with middle schoolers than it is with adults. And so every Tuesday night, the middle schoolers come to my house. We've cleaned the carpet ever so often, and heaven knows our couches need to be replaced, but it's fun. But this young man came, and I said, listen, I want you to understand something. I know what you're going through. I grew up in another country. And even though I was American, when I came back to this country, these people here were weird. Okay? And English was not my first language. It was my second language. And I remember the struggle that it was. I remember when I would read things, and it was in the Bible, and it said the earth quacked. And I thought, what does that have to do with the duck? And then someone said, no, it's quaked. Okay, the earth quaked. I got it. I understand those problems. I understand adjusting. Matter of fact, I had a hard time going, and I had a hard time coming back. I've been confused all my life, and it's okay. And I understand, and I know what you're going through. And here is my card. I don't care if you're at school. I don't care where you are. If you have a problem, call me. Why? Because I'm the host. That's the beauty. I'm in my country now. And I can reach out to everyone that comes as a host and welcome them in the name of Jesus. What would happen if this church, this group of people became known in all of this area? This is the group who says, welcome. They're going to go out of their way to begin the conversation, to develop the relationships. You who have come from somewhere else, you are the best equipped to help others. Why? Because you know how it feels. You know how it feels. Continue reading. His disciples were gone away. Then saith the woman of Samaria to him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Now stop here. Jesus went out of his way. He made a simple request, and I think we would all agree her response was less than nice. Would we agree to that? I mean, she's going, what are you doing talking to me? Now, let's be honest. Some of the disciples, if she had said that to them, and I take this because I've seen what they did in other situations, would have asked Jesus if he could call down fire from heaven and consume them. They would have done that. They would have said, look, I've gone out of my way to be nice to you, and you're not being nice to me. You can just go somewhere other than heaven. I'm trying to be nice since Brother Tom's not around. You know what? Jesus didn't do that. What if we were persistent in building bridges that were strong enough to deliver the gospel? What if we were persistent In other words, so we were turned down the first time. So they looked at us strange. So they didn't accept. Maybe they were wondering, what do they want from me? But guess what? That didn't stop Jesus. He just continued the conversation, said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that says to you, give me to drink, thou wouldst have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. Let me tell you something. Building bridges takes time. Building bridges takes effort. It's not hard building bridges to other people. It's just not. It's not easy becoming friends with someone that's just slightly different than you. Has a different schedule, has a different set of values, has a different goal in life. It's hard. It's real easy when we're all headed in the same direction and we all want the same stuff. We can all be friends with everybody. That's easy. But that's not who's out here. That's not the world in which we live. And so it takes effort. I remember several years ago that our son was playing t-ball. And that had been a big deal for me. How many hours does this take to involve yourself in the t-ball area? I mean, if you've been a parent and do it, you know that. That's a sacrifice. And I remember Beverly and I thinking about this. That's my wife, not Tom's wife, by the way. Just want to make that clear before we have all kind of church issues here. As it came out my mouth, I thought, draw that one back. My wife is named Beverly. Okay. Now, having said that, as we thought through that, I said, you know, Lord, we want you to use this. Use this time for your glory. And I remember in T-ball, we met this couple. And this couple, they were from out of town. They were from Jersey. Now, mind you, my wife is from Texas. That's two different language groups, okay? Jersey and Texas. And so we're here, and we're getting involved, and our kids are playing together, and we realize they have no friends. They have just moved here. And so we began going out afterwards. We began doing things. We began inviting them to our house. And I remember the first time he walked in with a huge bottle of wine and said, I work for Southern Wines and Spirits. And I'm thinking, great. And I'm going, I don't even have anything to open this with. What are we doing? And you know, if you're a pastor, you don't know what to do sometimes in all those cases. I figured it out since then. But at that point, I'm going, this is all new. I don't know what to do. And all we did was keep loving people. And we kept inviting them. And they came to church, and they got saved, and life changed. Then they moved away, and it's been, oh gosh, it's been 25 years since I saw them. And Friday night, we're still friends on Facebook, and I invited her. I said, hey, we're having something special on Friday. Why don't you come? You don't have to miss your church to come. It was so good. 25 years later. And she said, you know, if you hadn't reached out, if you hadn't been persistent, if you hadn't made friends, all my life would have been different. See, we just have to do it. And you go, well, they're not foreigners. I told you they're from Jersey. Think about that a minute. Okay? Continues on. And Jesus is talking to him, and it says, look, if you knew, and I won't read everything, but it gets down to verse number 15, and the woman saith unto him, sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. It says, listen, you're talking about this water. You don't have anything to get water. And he says, listen, the water I have is different from the water you're talking about. The water I give you, you will not thirst again. And she's going, that's what I want. I am sick and tired of coming to this well. I'm sick and tired of being shunned by all the other women. I have to come in the middle of the day because if I come in the morning, they're all going to be gossiping and talking about me. So I'm coming in the middle of the day to you. And now, if you will just give me this water, it will completely change my situation. But could I encourage you? What if we cared more about people's condition than their situation? We cared more about their condition than their situation. Now let me explain. Their situation can be physical. It can be emotional. You know, all you have to do is turn on the television and you can see some amazing appeals that have been developed to help with the situation that people are going through in life. Both in the U.S., outside of the U.S., organizations that are doing wonderful work in many cases, helping people's situation. But their condition is spiritual. Their condition is spiritual. That's a different story. That one doesn't always show up as easily. I remember when my son was beginning to raise his support. He came to me after a missions conference and he said, "Dad, how do I compete?" Now listen to this. I'm giving you inside track here. "How do I compete with people going to poor, needy countries? And I'm going to London." You know, when we think of London, we usually don't think about the situation of people. Now, mind you, there are some interesting situations and some very difficult situations. But that's not what comes to mind. We think the pound is stronger than the dollar. It costs more to live there than it does to live here. Some of the schools are fantastic. The places, I mean, the subway system we wish we had. We would be swimming, but that's a different issue in South Florida. All kind of things. And you don't think of London as a place where the situation, he says, how can I compare Burkina Faso with London? I said, you always have to remind people, you're going after their condition, not their situation. There's a big difference. And may I say, once you change the condition, it's amazing how the situation improves. But if all your work is aimed simply at the situation, what does it help if it gains the whole world but loses the soul, Jesus said? It won't make a bit of difference. You can take them out of poverty and give them their own business and the great bright future, and if they die, it won't make a difference. I'm not saying don't help people. I'm not saying don't worry about these issues. I'm saying we have to care more about the condition and aim in that. That way, whether we're talking to people who own multiple businesses in multiple countries and live in multiple situations but are lost, that is just as important to reach as the person who is living in a dirt floor and a thatch roof and everything else. No, we have to focus on their condition. And she was saying, help me change my situation. Could Jesus have changed her situation? Yes, he could have. But he chose to change the subject right then. He said, go. Call your husband and come hither. And the woman said, I have no husband. And Jesus said to her, thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands. And him whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that sayest thou truly. The woman said unto him, sir, I perceive you're a prophet. Don't you hate it when people know you and you don't know they know you? It's kind of a scary thing. Jesus did this to people all the time. I would have hated to be one of the disciples because it says he knew what they were thinking and he answered them. And they're going, oh, no, I got to stop thinking where he can hear. And here she is. She said, wait a minute. The minute he brought that little issue up in her life, look what she said. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Now, what did we do? We introduced controversy. She tried to draw things away from herself and said, let's talk about some things that are differences between us. I want you to get this. What if we avoided controversies to simply present Jesus? What if we avoided controversies simply to present Jesus? Lyle Armstrong is our missionary to Lebanon. A few years ago, he was with us. And he made this wonderful presentation of Lebanon and the ministry in Lebanon and all the things that were going on. And we've supported him for many, many years. And then there was a question and answer time. We don't usually have services when we have missionaries. We just have a big Q&A present. It's not preaching. It's we want to inform our people. So we'd have all kind of people. Well, what do you think of Hamas and all of these things going on? And he says, that really has nothing to do with presenting Jesus. Okay. Well, when you look at the prophecy and the Israel and the this, he says, well, that really has nothing to do with me and presenting Jesus. And I don't care what angle people shot at. If it had nothing to do with presenting Jesus, he said, I don't worry about that. I present Jesus. And I got to thinking, that takes a lot of discipline. How many of you have strong opinions? Can you keep them quiet? Well, usually strong opinions come with very open mouths. No offense. But it's so hard sometimes. But what if, for the sake of reaching people, we avoided controversies to simply present Jesus? See, Jesus said, as was quoted a while ago, we were going to receive power, that we are to be witnesses of who? Of him. It helped growing up in another country because I figured out early Jesus wasn't a Democrat or a Republican. It's amazing. Now, I know some of you would argue with me on that. You would be wrong, but you would argue anyway. It wouldn't stop. But the bottom line is, that's not the point. When I'm talking about reaching people for Christ, it doesn't matter which form of government is the best. It doesn't matter. People talk all the time, well, you know, Ryan and Sarah over there in London and their national health and this and that. It doesn't matter. Jesus matters. Jesus is the one that's Lord over all. Not whether I'm from one political party or one form of government or one. No, that's not the point. The kingdom of God is the last kingdom standing. I read the last chapter. I love to go to the end of the book. That's the one that wins. So I don't have to worry about the other. Jesus did not. Now, he answered her and he said, listen, the bottom line is worship is not so much the where, it's from where, and it's from the heart. And that's who God is looking for, people that will worship him in spirit and in truth. But he, in a sense, kind of like skipped over the whole controversy and just simply said, that's not what's important here. What did it do to that lady? It brought her back to the real issue. And you want to get to someone, keep them focused on Jesus. Keep them focused on him. Verse number 25, the woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. And Jesus saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. I'm the one. What if we loved people all the way to the truth? Just love them so much that we put our agenda to one side, we have put everything else to one side, and we just said, I have one thing for you. I want you to know the one who has changed my life so much. That's all I want. I have a neighbor who is Muslim. I have been a friend to them for many, many years. I am not a handyman. You need to understand that. When my wife and I got married, it was debatable for me which side of the hammer was supposed to be held and which one was supposed to be used. And yet I have gone and changed the plumbing in her sink. I have gone and done this. I have been to with them to court for different issues. Why would you do all of this? For one thing, I want that family to know the truth. I want that family to know what a Christian is like. Not just what a Christian believes, what a Christian is like. Coming to faith is usually a process for most people. I was reading one pastor, and he said, in our church, we have come to the realization that the average person takes 18 to 24 months before they come to faith in Christ. We have to engage them for 18 to 24 months before they will make that step. Why? Because people come and they examine the way. They examine the lives of those who are walking in the way. Then they make a determination if the way is for them or not. Now you say, well, that doesn't sound right. Well, but stop and think. Jesus did not begin and say, obey me. What did he say? Follow me. His invitation was always follow. Walk with me a while. Spend some time around me. See how I am. You walk close enough to Jesus for a while, and someday you may believe. And then you might obey. We always want it different. We won't come believe, or no, we really turned around. We want you to obey and then believe and then follow. But that's not the way Jesus presented it. He said, follow. Follow me. And then after having Peter follow him for a while, he said, who do you say I am? He didn't say, join my church first. He just said, follow. Let me ask you something. Do you have anyone that you know is consciously following your life on a day-by-day basis who as yet do not believe, but they're watching? And you invite them to watch. You invite them over to your house for the Super Bowl party to show them that it's different than the other Super Bowl parties. Now, you're just as crazy as the others, but it's different. At the end of your Super Bowl party, they'll remember the Super Bowl tomorrow. That's an encouragement right there. Things like this that make a difference. We love people all the way to the truth. Let me give you another one. You keep reading down there. Verse 29, the woman left and went into the city and said to the men, come, see a man which told me all the things that I ever did. Is not this the Christ? What if these people that you've been working with were the key to reaching many, many more? What if they were the key to reaching many more? What if that person that you've invested your time with, created a relationship, shared with them your life, you've avoided the conflicts, the controversies, you've shown them the truth, you've shown them Jesus and the way you acted, the way you lived, all of a sudden they came to know the Lord. And then they said, I would really like you to help me share this with my friends. And all of a sudden they invite you to a gathering of their friends and you're going, where did all these people come from? I didn't even know all these people were in the community. Let me tell you something. People that aren't like you, you can miss sometimes. You can totally miss them. Take it from a cyclist. You totally miss us when you're in your car. I know I keep pushing this. I'm trying to get this to be a cycling-friendly community. Let me tell you something. There are churches today and countries that you will never get a missionary because of a relationship right here. It's amazing. As you read missions books today, it is the new frontier in missions, reaching those who have migrated and through them reaching many others. That's the whole point of what Ryan and Sarah are trying to do in London. There are so many countries there, they say, if we can reach them here, then it's amazing what God may be able to do when they take it elsewhere. They may not even have to travel. They're Skyping. They're WhatsApping. They're doing all kinds of stuff. All kinds of things that can happen. But we have to reach those that are around us first. The leaders of over 150 countries in our world today got their education in an American university. My question is, what impression do they have of us? Let me give you an example. A few years ago, many years ago now, you may have heard the story about a Cuban general who flew his family in under the U.S. radar and landed in Key West. Anybody remember that? Scared the bejeebies out of everybody. Because he literally flew in from Cuba and landed before anybody knew he was coming. Scared them to death. Well, that made the news. A few days later, I get a call. And a chaplain from the airbase said, have you heard of this on the news? I go, yeah. He said, he wants to speak to a Baptist pastor. Would you come? I go, sure. He said, well, we'll have to do an FBI check on you and all that stuff. So I said, so a week later, he calls me back and he said, you didn't pass the test. No, just kidding. He said, no, they've moved him. But so he's not in the area anymore. I said, did you ever find out why he wanted to meet? I mean, people live here don't want to talk to Baptist pastors most of the time. Why would you fly in from another country and your request is, I want to talk to a Baptist pastor? He said, because when he was 12 years old, his parents lived in Tennessee for a year while his dad was going to a college. And the neighbor invited him to go to church with them. And he went to church and he heard about Jesus and he accepted Jesus. And at 13, they moved back. Years later, during the Bay of Pigs and everything, he happened to be in the right place and thwarted the advances of those that were coming in and blah, blah, blah. He was made kind of a national hero and he went up in the ranks and he was now a general and his family is there. And one day he looked and saw his boy was 12. And he remembered what he heard when he was 12. And he said, my son's never going to hear that if I stay here. And he flew his family out so that they could hear. I don't know who that family was in Tennessee, but I want to thank them someday. You did what you were supposed to do. Fidel spent some time here in the U.S. too. His impression was not as good. How has history changed? And it wasn't a pastor that made the difference. It wasn't so much a church. It was an average person who saw someone next to him who said, "Hey, would you go to church with us? Would you let him go?" Sure. That changed. That changed a life. Fidel's neighbors weren't as kind. And 50 plus years of history in our world could have been different if someone would have simply looked at someone that was different from them and reached out to them. What if we took Jesus' words seriously? "Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes, look on the fields. They are white already to harvest." As you look at that passage, Jesus tells his disciples, "Wake up. You're here complaining in your heart that we're in Samaria. You had to go into the Samaritan village to get your food. You know, why are all these people?" Jesus said, "Wake up to what's really happening. Look around." Listen, we live in an amazing part of the world right now. God is bringing people to us that we could never go see where they're from. But God's bringing them here. And it is an amazing thing. And you say, "But," please, don't say "but" when God says "go." Don't say "but" when God says, "But I brought them here." Don't give him these excuses, because God is doing something. God wants to do even more. God is working around us. See the hand of God at work and join in what he's doing. I guarantee you, it will be the best thing you ever did for you, for those around you, for your church, and for the world we live in. Wake up, look around, and join God in what he's doing.